Awesome. Right, so let me start with a word of motivation for the physicists in the room, because there is no zero number of physicists. So, motivation. Okay, so it's about why do I start to do such things. So what I want to do with it is to quantize theories with symmetries. And in particular, okay, they're the ones we know very well how to quantize. So, for example, Yang-Mills theory. And there are the ones which we don't quite know what to do about, for example, gravity. So I entered the business because I was interested in gravity. And we heard a lot about it yesterday. Okay, so that's the basic motivation. And so what BV does for us, it describes a very important ingredient, namely the space of observables. So I'm interested, so let's say that F is the space of fields in the theory. And I want to identify those which are invariant under this symmetry, so we say gauge invariant, and which satisfy equations of motion. So I want to describe the space of gauge invariant on shell fields. So this is what I'm going for as a certain cohomology of a given differential complex. So this is some cohomology of F with a differential. So I want to introduce a differential on my space of fields and then describe what I'm interested in physically as a cohomology of that differential. So that differential contains all the relevant information. And this is called the BV differential. Okay, now maybe a few words about strategy, which is for me slightly different than maybe for some other people in this room. So I work in deformation quantization. So the first thing I do, I construct the classical theory, I introduce the classical BV differential, and then deform everything. So strategy is to start with classical. So this would mean that I will have some Poisson structure on the space of fields. I'm being very vague at the moment. I will get more precise soon. Then deform it. So to deform it to a non-commutative product, which I denote by star. So that's going from classical to quantum. Then somewhere along the way, do renormalization. Which, again, maybe I will manage to talk about, but I want to leave out the technical bits. And finally, when I do all my algebraic business, I also want to deform the differential so that instead of getting classical gauge invariant observables, I get quantum observables at the end. So deform the differential to S hat. So this would be quantum observables. Okay, so that's the rough idea of what I'm going to do. Now, Okay, because the rest of the crowd is mathematicians, then I will now go and provide more sensible definitions of what I'm actually describing here. So on the first part of my talk will be on the framework which I use to do all that stuff, which is called perturbative algebraic QFT. So PA QFT, that's what I do for a living. And let's start with some structures. So what I need from physics first, I need to know where I'm describing this theory, so I need to know what's my spacetime. And this is going to be now Lorentzian, a globally hyperbolic manifold. So globally hyperbolic Lorentzian manifold M, so M with a metric. Globally hyperbolic, it means that it has a Cauchy surface. Has a Cauchy surface. Sigma, and roughly speaking, this manifold can be described, so it's topologically the same as sigma cross R. So M is nothing else really but sigma cross R. So that's globally hyperbolic. Now on this spacetime, I want to have some fields. So first I want to have, I want to specify what kind of objects I measure. So what kind of object. And this is given typically by sections of some vector bundle over M, so E, which I called configuration space, maybe E of M to be precise. So this is going to be sections of some vector bundle over M. So E is a vector bundle. And in this talk, I want to focus on the example of the scalar field. So E of M is just going to be smooth functions, smooth sections. So example, scalar field. E of M is smooth functions M to R. Okay, so that's the kinematical structure. Now my observables, my fields, are going to be now functions on that. So three observables. So these are functions on E of M. Okay, I will specify some more requirements for these in a second, in a concrete model. And for dynamics, which is going to be introduced by using some sort of action in Lagrangian formalism. So dynamics. So this is Lagrangian formalism. Okay, again, I will say in a few words what I exactly mean by that. Good, so that's all I need from physics. Now I want to say a few words about the first ingredient, namely spacetime, because the main difference between living in Euclidean and living in Lorentzian is that you have the causal structure. So for those of you who are maybe not so familiar or not so happy with the causal structure, a picture. So, causal structure. So let's take the simplest example of a spacetime, which is globally hyperbolic. So take Minkowski spacetime, which is R4 with a metric that is 1 minus 1 minus 1 minus 1. And okay, R4 is difficult to draw, so let's actually take R2. So let's take that bit. So we have space, we have time, and now we have a metric which looks like this, and this tells us about directions being light-like, space-like, or causal. So light-like, so this is going to be a light cone. So light cone is characterized by the condition that, well, essentially contraction of a vector with that is equal to zero. Then this direction is going to be, so this is light-like. This direction is going to be time-like inside the cone, and this direction is going to be space-like. So this you have on Minkowski. Now, on a general Lorentzian manifold, this is what you have in each tangent space. So that's why this picture is already sufficient to understand what's going on. So in general, you have the tangent space at each point is isomorphic to the Minkowski spacetime. So you have this structure at each point. So you can talk about directions being space-like, light-like, time-like, and also about curve having that property. So we identify the following classes of curves. Types of curves. So there's going to be space-like curve gamma. So what does it mean? It means that the tangent vector is always space-like. So gamma prime is space-like everywhere along the curve. They're also time-like and null. And these two, so if something is either time-like or null, we call it causal. Okay, so there is more information about localization of the objects than just being disjoint. For example, if I have two disjoint regions, I can also specify extra information. Are they space-like disjoint, time-like disjoint, or whatever, maybe neither. But there is going to be that extra gradation. Okay, and I introduce one more definition. So I want to, there's also some sort of natural notion of what does it mean to be convex. So everybody knows what is convex, but there's also causally convex, which means that contains all its causal curves. So in a sense, it's nicely behaving with respect to that structure. So a subset O in M is called causally convex if it contains all causal curves starting and finishing in it. Again, I can draw you a picture. So a good causally convex set is this one. So here there is a causal curve and it doesn't leave this set. A bad example would be, so this is okay. And if I had a hole in it here, for example, and something like that, and I would have a curve which leaves that. Here, this is all embedded, so they're not going to be ambiguous. So this curve sits nicely inside. This doesn't, so this is not a good example of a causally convex set. So there is some restriction on how topologically crazy things I can have in that family. And this is going to be one of the main differences in the whole abstract setup, that I start with subsets, with objects which are causally convex in addition to being, let's say, bounded, open, and so on.
What goes wrong with you?
What goes wrong is causality. So I will introduce some axioms, and one of the axioms is going to be causality. And this axiom would not hold if I allow for this sort of sets to be in my theory. But yeah, there. It's interesting because there are many things which do not go wrong. So I think that's. Yeah, that's the price for being Lorentzian. So there's an interesting question, of course, how you extend to causally non-convex sets. But this is work in progress. I should, of course, say that, okay, so this is the Lorentzian part, but when we come to the comparison, this is going to be joint work with Owen William. So I would love to give you more theorems, but we are still not quite done with that yet, but you will at least see some conjectures. Right. Good. So there is that, and I denote by calls M, so this would be collection of all bounded, open, causally convex. Subsets of M. Okay, so now on this, I want to define my classical quantum and whatever else you want theory as certain functors. So let me start maybe with specifying what I mean by the space of fields. Oops. So now there's going to be the moment where I give a lot of definitions, and then there will be a moment when I give a lot of examples. So sorry for that. Okay, so let me start with this. So a model for the space of fields, and we are working on a fixed space then for the moment, for the sake of this talk. The space of fields is a functor, and it goes, so I denote it by F, and it goes from this to, so for this bit, I actually just need commutative algebras, and because of me being a functional analyst, I would also want these to be topological algebras. And for later purposes, there will be also an involution on these. So this is the category of commutative topological star algebras. So these are my fields. Great device. And now I want to say what's my classical theory. So as I already indicated here, the classical theory is essentially going to be a Poisson algebra, or rather a functor into Poisson algebras. So maybe another definition, a classical field theory is a functor P going from, again, living on this causal convex set, going now into Poisson. So this would be Poisson topological star algebras. Okay, I should actually add unital because I want this to be unital. 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 Okay, and this would be great as a starting point, but I also need some sort of causality. So there is going to be an extra condition such that, so if O1, O2 objects are space-like separated, then the corresponding algebras should have the trivial bracket always. So I take the Poisson algebra of one region, the Poisson algebra of the other region, and I find out, sorry, this is not a commutator, this is this type of half the commutator. I'm not using the usual curly bracket because it's a BV bracket for everyone, so it's taken. Yes?
Well, I just have a question about your definition of causal structure, because I don't see where you exclude the closed time-like curve.
Hyperbolic.
Somewhere it's there.
Yeah.
Okay, because torus would satisfy all your
concerns. I said everything lives in a globally hyperbolic space-time. So, and they don't have closed time like curves.
But you don't describe it as a local, okay, because
it
would be harder to kind of capture that from the structure.
It's not, yes.
So how did I interpret, I take the spectrum of the C star algebra, it's a sheaf or something.
Uh-huh.
What's that sheaf?
Well, in general, I'm not sure if I know the answer. In particular examples, so this F would be regular functionals on the configuration space.
The space of solutions.
The space, not the space of solutions, the space of all sections, yeah. So these are a bit infinite dimensional things, but maybe. So the example which I actually going to talk about is F is regular functionals on E of M. So I guess in your language, this would be the smeared observables. So that is good model for F. Yes?
You didn't tell us what the morphisms in either category are. I can sort of
Whatever you guessed, but so this would be, okay, let me spell it out. So this would be a continuous unital star algebra embeddings.
Actually, so it will matter to you that those are embeddings.
Yeah, so morphisms. And this goes for the rest of the talk. Morphisms are embeddings.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that? I don't.
By embeddings. Or,
but the sentence you just said.
Oh, so
algebras are embeddings.
So the inclusions of algebras I look at will be embeddings. So it's like subsystems. So you have a larger system and the smaller system, and the smaller system is injectively embedded into the larger one. So you don't lose observables where you go into the largest.
So there's no notion of locality.
This is the notion of locality, yes.
Is it embedded? Just an immersion with the symmetric property? Or
injection?
Yeah, it's injected.
Don't say embedding in the algebra. Just injection.
Just injected. Injective morphism.
Okay.
Yeah, injective algebra morphism. So morphisms are injective, but the rest you can guess.
You're
here.
Telling us what half bracket means?
This is the Poisson bracket. This is notation for the Poisson bracket.
So it's not some funny, like, positive, like, cone Feynman.
No. This is okay. My notation for the Poisson bracket.
It turns out this is the same thing.
There's a way to define it by yeah.
Just
in fact, it's because the Peyer's bracket is the Poisson bracket.
But this is just it. I just don't want to confuse it with the BV bracket.
It's a half quantum.
It's a half quantum, yes. It's oral quantized. That's the idea. Okay. So this is the classical theory, now quantum theory. So AQFT.
So you were not putting any like Carl Kessler type axioms.
No, there is one. This.
Okay, but the rest of it.
I did. So I said it's a functor. So this is the isotony axiom. Okay, this is classical first thing. But the isotony axiom is in this being a functor. And, well, that restriction on morphisms as well. Then this is the causality. And intentionally, I'm leaving out the time slice axiom. And there are all the other axioms, but who cares? So, I also left out the vacuum because I'm on curved space time, so I cannot have the vacuum axiom.
And I'm used to some sort of axiom that says that if I build my region out of patching, then the algebra that I generate from the small pieces generate the whole algebra.
Yeah, that's the additivity, but that's not in the starter package. Okay. That's what you have to earn later on. Yeah, but that's a good one.
That's an addition, okay.
that you buy an extension, yes.
The basic model doesn't have it. It's the ground floor model.
This is like a very, very cheap version. Yes?
Does it matter whether you take the sort of half bracket or just for any larger open set that contains both O1 and O2.
Yes.
Yes.
So if you want so that is correct what you said. You can take it in any larger open set, or you can take even the inductive limit algebra. So if you're bothered by that, you can define P of M as inductive limit over O in this causal of M of P of O, and you take the bracket there. But this is the same as taking it in a larger thing. Okay, so AQFT or PQFT model. So now, again, it's actually the same, but I changed the target category. So it's a functor from this to algebras. So it's the same I had before, but drop the commutative. And again, such that now I have the full commutator. So again, I require these things to commute for O1, O2 space like. Okay, and again, this can be taken in this larger algebra, which is inductive limit O in A of O. Okay, so that's the quantum theory. And you see that the only extra thing which I got from the causality is this axiom. And this is what people in my community would call locality. So there are two notions of locality.
Okay.
Yeah, why not?
How would you describe it?
Yeah.
The fact that it's only...
I would call it Einstein
like
causality.
Like things bigger,
yeah.
Things are bigger.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I have to ask them.
It's confusing for the rest of
them. Yeah, I know.
Another question, Katja.
Yeah. No, I'm giving the talk for a reason.
So like, the equations here are like hyperbolic. The PD is hyperbolic, it's hyperbolic. So
yes.
Is there some kind of local constancy in the time direction because of the hyperbolicity?
Yes, exactly.
So if I take my console set and extend it a bit in the time direction,
yes. So there is that's coming. So that's the time slice axiom. Very good. So this is the next thing. So these are now off shell without that axiom. If I impose the time slice axiom, then I'm talking about on shell models. So these are said to be on shell. So this I can say in a few words by saying that yes, locally constant in time direction, or to be more precise, if for n containing so a neighborhood of a Cauchy surface, and of course n has to be in my class of causally convex sets, I have A of n is already isomorphic to the whole thing, A of m. So all the information is contained only in the neighborhood of the Cauchy surface.
So your surface, just for kind of Cauchy surfaces in all of space, does it imply it for like sort of a Cauchy surface in all the region?
Yeah. You can take a Cauchy surface in, so each little region is a space time on its own, because it's causally convex. So its little Cauchy surface neighborhood is then isomorphic to the whole region. So this doesn't, so this can be formulated as a local condition.
Okay. But if I just set it globally, that forces the local version as well?
Well, that forces the local version if I now say that, instead of looking at fixed subset on globally hyperbolic spacetime, I want this for all globally hyperbolic spacetimes.
Like that?
Okay, I can write it locally, maybe this is better.
I mean, that might be true, but I...
It's better if I just write it locally. Yeah, okay, So, N is then, Cauchy surface.
Yeah.
For O, then A of N is isomorphic to A of O. That's the local statement.
Sorry,
yes.
You're excluding gauge theories because that's not true for gauge theories, right? There's the,
what is not true for gauge theories?
Well, these type of things, there's corners, degrees of freedom that you have to be very careful of. So
you're talking about
scalar fields here.
I think we have to talk about it later because don't really understand your remark.
Maybe here your sets of observables are such that they don't touch the boundary. But that's the difference between field theory and gauge theories. In gauge theories,
I'm not sure.
I'm
not talking about the boundary.
No, but when you have these local things, for globally it's fine, but when you start...
I want to finish this talk in the final time. So we can discuss it, and I'm sure. So this is just a statement about equations of motion. So what poseness of a Cauchy problem?
Yeah, but it's not on gauge theory because
it's one of those modulo gauge. So this I have a question of this hyperbolic modulo gauge, and she's going to touch the gauge inside this BRC complex. So
But the modulo gauge is when you have a boundary, you cannot. Well, you mean modulo gauge of the gauge boundary degrees of freedom too, but if you gauge that, So you're always inside your set,
These are open.
And your observables are completely supported and they never touch the boundary. If that's the case, then... But then, then you can't really build up the whole thing by union of these, right?
with open objects.
Yeah. You cannot. You can then you lose. Then you lose what you have. You cannot be. You cannot be the whole things by uniting all of them. You're losing certain observables there.
Yeah, you lose some global observables.
Yes, you're losing the Wilson lines. So.
Well, I think we can discuss it later because I'm just describing you a very basic setup.
Okay.
And I think the question of how you build global things out of local things is a separate question. So I'm just telling you how to define local things. But it doesn't. The talk has a finite time span, so I'm not going to get to global things. But we can discuss about it when I finish. Right. So after this bit of controversy, we can move on. So let me just grab my notes for one last definition. Okay, so that is enough to describe the free theory. So now I want to say something about interaction. And this I want to do in the perturbative setting. So let me write one formula, which I will not explain. But I want to write it because this is the motivation. So this is the Dyson series. So when in physics people were confronted with the problem of introducing interaction, well, one of the first things they tried was to do the sort of interaction picture of quantum mechanics. So they said that, okay, there should be a unitary time evolution operator between times t and s. And they came up with a formula of terms of a series, so there are some coefficients which are probably not so important, but there is some coupling constant which enters as a formal parameter. This is, there's also h bar, which also enters as a formal parameter in this game. And here you have an integral over this time slice, if you want. So we are on Minkowski spacetime. Physicists were on Minkowski spacetime back then. Now they're all over the place. And then you integrate things which you call time-ordered products. Time-ordered products of Wieck polynomials. And I want to explain both terms, but in a different language. So let's just, for the moment, accept that there is something like this. And so this is a time-ordered product and these objects are, so I give it quotation marks, Wieck polynomials. Okay, so now my framework is essentially trying to make mathematical sense out of this formula. It's not mine, I mean, it's other people's, but now I took it over. So first I want to tell you what's time-ordered products, and somehow along the way I will also explain Wieck polynomials. So that's the last bit of mathematical definitions. And then I really want to have the last 15 minutes to give you the comparison bit. Okay, so what do I want from that? Well, so time-ordered product is given as a data of certain triple, so psi and something I call t. So at is going to be a functor. At goes from, well, the same place as everyone. Are there more questions to be asked? Pavel, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. If you have a question, I can start to answering. Right, so these two commutative algebras Second, well, there is a natural identification. So this is natural iso between, well, let me just check which direction I did. Okay, this one. So AT composed with forgetful functor to vector spaces. So I forget this to vector spaces. So I forget the algebra structure. And I go to A, where I also forgot the algebra structures. So this A of M I constructed before as a vector space is the same as AT of M. So that's the first identification. And the second identification has something to do with these Wick polynomials. So I want to identify this new structure, this time-ordered product. I want to say that this is equivalent to the pointwise product of classical theory. If I identify classical things, classical observables with Wick polynomials. So there is an identification which should go from F, where I shove in some formal parameters, to AT, and this works in commutative algebras. And just a remark, so for F in F of O, TF is a Wick ordered observable. So this tells me everything about that formula. So it tells me how I identify these things in here. Tells me what's that big T, so this is just the product of these things. And now I have to sum it over all powers, but then I don't worry about convergence since it's a formal power series, so I can just leave it at that. Now what comes out is the so-called formal S matrix. But before I do that, there is one more, maybe I should use the other words. There is one more condition which I have to specify. Yeah, there's still place. So such that, no, there is no space. Sorry, so this is not the end of the definition. The end of the definition is here. Such that. So this is going to be terribly important. So if I have O1, O2 disjoint, now I can have various orderings of these. So there is the time direction. So I can have a situation where O1 is later than O2 or O2 is later than O1. So if O1 is later than O2, so it means that O1 is here, O2 is here somehow, then this time-ordered product satisfies a certain relation with the star product. So then, so for all F, G in A, T of F in A, T of O1 and G in A, T of O2, I have that the time-ordered product of F and G, and this is now modulo all these fancy identifications I made, that this is the same. So G is here, so it's good. So it's the same as the star product of F and G. Okay, so there is a sort of compatibility condition for disjoint things, disjoint supports. And another one, okay, now we flip these things. So if I have O1 earlier than O2, then I have, with the same definition, the time ordered product FG is G star F. So that actually says that this commutative product structure introduces the time ordering. So this introduces time ordering. Okay, so that's my part of the story. Now I want to convince you that this structure has something to do with what Kevin and Owen did in their book. So that this product, yes?
Yeah. A few extra minutes to under all the time because we have helped you so much.
Okay, fine. So let me just start with sketching what I think is the right identification of things, and then let's see how much I'm going to be able to say in a concrete model. So maybe that's a fair division of time. Oh, okay, I promised some physical stuff, so maybe I should also say this. So the formal S matrix, so something which replaces the Dyson formula, is defined as S of V is the time-ordered exponential of I normal-ordered V over H bar, where normal ordered V is T on V, and V is a field. So in the end, what I'm interested in calculating is this formal S matrix. So this whole structure here is just a way for me to compute the coefficients in that object. Okay, comparison. So I drew a table. So on one side you have Lorentzian. On the other side you have Euclidean. And let's see what's the definition. So the comparison is now for the free scalar field. Or maybe not free, just scalar field. So just to answer your question, Laurent, I'm going to talk only about the scalar field in this rest 5 minutes or 10 minutes of my talk. That's definitely not the end of the story, though. But this is how far we got. Okay, so and again, the simplest example of spacetime would be Minkowski on this side, and on this side, just the Euclidean sphere. So that's clear. Now, the configuration space is going to be the same, so I don't need to have an extra thing to it. So E of M for the scalar field is smooth functions. What else? Okay, so now we need some equations of motion. So there is, again, a common part. So I have one form ds, so it's in one form on the configuration space. And this specifies the equations of motion by the following conditions. So equations of motion are the zero locus of that form. And here our worlds diverge. So on one side, these are going to be hyperbolic, and on the other side, these are going to be elliptic. So on one side ds of phi. So on my side, this is minus D'Alembertian plus m squared phi hyperbolic. And on the other side, ds of phi. So this sign, so this is the Laplacian, not the BV Laplacian, plus m squared phi equals zero elliptic. So that's another big difference. And in both cases, I denote this as p on phi. P is that linear operator on both sides. I think I might be running out of chalk. So now we are in the free scalar field situation. I define the BV operator. There is no gauge symmetry, so it only encodes the information about the equations of motion. So here I define delta, which is insertion, actually in my case minus the insertion of ds, and this acts on the space of polyvector fields. So we have the polyvector fields regular, so this can be seen as well, a subset in the space of all vector fields. And I don't want to go into details what does it mean regular, but in my language, it means that all the functional analysis is gone. So this is the situation where you don't have to deal with distributions, you deal only with smooth sections. So these are regular polyvector fields. On this side, you also have the same thing, and I think the sign convention is that this is just the insertion of ds, and here you also have polyvector fields. Okay, and this builds a differential complex. So something which I also would denote ops classical of O would be these regular guys on O with the differential delta. And here it's essentially the same, drop the regular. So there is not much difference. So that describes me the space of solutions to these equations of motion in both settings. And what else? Okay, so now I come to the propagators. So here I have the propagators. And here it becomes a bit messy. So here I have some distinguished guys. So I have retarded and advanced Green functions. Advanced Green functions. And they are both Green functions for P, so for P, but they have distinguished support properties. So retarded Green function has support only in the future and advanced only in the past. So if I have here the test function f, then g r on f would be supported into the future, and g a on f into the past. And neither of them is actually going to be used for anything, but their sum is going to be used for further construction. So I define the Dirac propagator. So G Dirac, which is 1/2 sum of GR plus GA. So it's also a green function because of the 1/2. Whereas on this side, they have just one green function G for the operator P. Sorry?
Feynman propagator will be the difference? Or is
Feynman propagator is this plus a symmetric bit. So this is very closely related to Feynman. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is almost like the Feynman propagator. Okay. So I'm almost there. So in this concrete model, now I can use that to define some of the structures I introduced before. So in particular, I can use that green function to define the Wick ordering. So Wick ordering. So T is an exponential of a certain bidifferential operator. So let me see, okay, I h bar over 2 operator D, sorry. Operator D, D, where this is a bidifferential operator when it acts on a functional. So it takes the second derivative of that functional, so this is the second functional derivative, and contracts it with the Dirac propagator. Okay, so this is a bidifferential operator and I just take its exponential. Whereas on this side, from what I understood reading Owens and Kevin's work, there is also something similar. So there is Wick ordering, which can be written in terms of an exponential of a certain operation. So here, Wick ordering is W. So this I'm writing in quotation mark because I didn't attempt to introduce these things. But there is also some H bar, and there is also certain bilinear operation, which depends on the green function. So that's the first identification. And now, more interestingly, one can also identify things on the level of quantum and classical observables. So maybe I can manage it here. So I introduce quantum observables of O, which is again going to be this polyvector fields, but I introduce formal parameter H bar, and there is going to be the quantum version of the BV operator. So S is the quantum BV operator, which is delta, which I had before, minus I H bar times the BV Laplacian. So this guy here is the BV Laplacian. Okay, and on the other side, it looks more or less the same. Now, what this operator T does in our setting, it turns out that it doesn't only intertwine the products. I mean, this was constructed in a way in which it intertwines the products, but it also intertwines this structure. So it maps this differential complex to the one with the classical BV operator. So let me just write it as the last bit of this comparison. So the last bit is that actually T is intertwines this complex which I just defined with the classical one, which I defined before, but with formal power series in H bar. So intertwines the differentials and deforms the product. Whereas on this side, this W also intertwines the differentials and deforms, well, not a product, because here you don't have an honest product, deforms the factorization product. Okay, so what this indicates, I think, is that the right way to identify these two formalisms is to compare the factorization product on Kevin and Owen's side with the time-ordered product on my side. So I would expect that, I mean, if one restricts the factorization algebra functor here to causally convex subsets, one can actually get equivalence between these functors, modulo weak rotating. Moreover, I think this is great for the left-hand side of that, because there are many techniques on how to construct things for gauge theories for more complicated regions than just these causally convex ones. So another thing which I think is worth doing is to use the methods from here to generalize this basic starter set of algebraic quantum field theory into something more interesting, where you also have some homotopy theory flavor. But this is still the work in progress. So thanks for your attention. Sorry for going over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes you find an equation which is both hyperbolic and elliptic.
Good.
So if you have a theory which is topological in one direction, you call that direction time, it's both hyperbolic and elliptic.
Yeah.
So then you should expect...
Then you should have exactly the same. Yeah.
And like Pavel's theorem is an example. He said in this case, you know, if you have a factorization algebra with a P0 structure, it's the same thing as just restricting to a cookie surface and having an ordinary Poisson bracket, which is local in the same sense you used.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, yeah, I guess for such theories, one should be able to prove that as a theorem.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, thanks.
Other thoughts? Other questions?
There were many questions.
There were many questions.
There were many questions. I can forgive you for having questions now.
Okay. Well, let's go to coffee then, and thank you again.